This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Let's take it from the top.
Good morning, friends. It is a Monday. It is beautiful. It is March 10th, and we hope you are having the day of your life. It's going to get a whole lot better because the Chris and Amy show is happening, but there's no Amy. I'm not saying it's better because there's no Amy. It's not better or worse. Nate Gatter sitting in for Amy Marks-Kors. I'm Chris Ranji, and we have a show to do for you. 314-436-7900. Please reach out to us with that number. You can also reach out to us with the voice messaging feature from the Odyssey app. What's the Odyssey app, you ask? Well, that's how you listen to the show live. That's how you listen to the podcasts of all the shows on the station. And Cardinals baseball, you can hear that live too when the season starts. And you can drop us a voice message. Click the button that says send a message and we will hear it here. Maybe you'll even get to hear it on the air. Also streaming live if you want to watch us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. At Chris Amy KMOX.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everybody will be talking about.
Yeah, it's a pretty big day here at KMOX. We made a major announcement earlier today. We're going to talk about that in just a moment.
SIUE makes the NCAA
Cougars
tournament for the first time in program history. The men's basketball team, Division I for almost two decades, didn't have a winning season until a couple of years ago. But Brian Baroni has taken the SIUE Cougars to an OVC championship and to the NCAA tournament for the first time. We will talk to him at noon.
Let's go, Cougs. Also, City SC, how about them? They scored. They had three goals, and they won the game over the weekend, and it's a good thing we've got Nate Gatter here because Nate is one of our soccer people. He hosts the Soccer Report with Jen Sees, and so he's here with us today, which is very good news. So we're going to talk City SC later on in the show, and you have a problem with Amy Marks-Kors, which we'll get to
well.
Well,
more than one.
Well, there's multiple problems.
We're going to tackle one at a time.
Yeah, we'll get to this one specific issue later.
I also have a little problem with you. And it just popped up in the last couple minutes because you said we hope that you're having the day of your life.
Yeah.
And I do hope that for people. But it made me think it's 10:06 in the morning.
Yeah.
What could happen? And there could be things. But give me an example of something that could happen to you.
Yeah.
Before 10 o'clock in the morning that would make something already on track to be the day of your life.
Maybe you found out that you have been let go from a job you hate and you get to collect unemployment. That's not bad.
That's what would be the day of your life.
Yeah, like you walk right into the office at 9:05 or 8:05 or whatever time you're supposed to get there, and they say, hey, we need to talk to you, and you go down to the hallway, and you hate it. Like, it's just the job drains you, and then you get down there, and they go, we have to let you go. But you get unemployment. That's pretty good. Maybe a severance package.
I love that producer Matt Pajeski immediately turned on his microphone and was like, yeah, that'd be great.
That'd be great.
Can you really imagine getting let go from a job you hate?
He really interjected there, didn't he?
What if maybe you have a coworker named Chris and you're never going to listen to him again?
Oh, man. This is a good working environment for Matt Pajeski.
It
is.
Toxic.
This pipsqueak. Okay, I'm just kidding. I love him. So it was if you have not been listening to the station today and are just now tuning in, this was a pretty big day for us. We made the announcement a little over an hour ago that we, as a station, we've been on 1120 AM forever. The 100th anniversary of the station will happen in December. So we're talking a century of KMOX coming to you. We've been available on the Odyssey app for a long time, and you can listen to it wherever you are, put it on your phone and take it with you. But we have picked up an FM signal. We will also be simulcasting on 104.1 FM starting March 24th. So that is the week that opening day happens. Opening day is March 27th. So just in time for baseball season, you will have many options to listen to us. 104.1 FM, 1120 AM, and obviously the Odyssey app. And you're probably wondering, well, you already had 98.7 FM. This signal's way better. So the 98.7 FM signal, it's not a full frequency, so it was only available crystal clear in parts of the area, but 104.1 is, you'll be able to pick it up everywhere. It's awesome. So we are very excited to be simulcasting on 1120 AM and 104.1 FM starting March 24th. Two weeks from today.
I'm very excited about it, too. But you know what that reminded me of when you were just explaining, like, why you already had an FM station or whatever? It reminds me of, like, after a breakup when everybody's like, oh, yeah, I never did like her. You know what I mean? How long did we spend saying, oh, yeah, we've got an FM signal, 98.7. And now as soon as we get another one, Ranji's like, yeah, this one's way better.
It is.
You're right. You're exactly right.
We upgraded.
But
she was a fine girlfriend. We did better.
Right. And you are the buddy who comes up to you and goes, look, dude, I didn't want to say anything for those 2 years because I was like, you never know. Maybe she's going to be around forever. But like, this is way better.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think what you would say is, listen, I liked Jennifer. Does anybody name Jennifer anymore?
His co-host. I liked
girlfriend 98.7.
Yeah, I liked her. But, you know, Tasha's way better. I don't know where I got Tasha from. But Tasha is way better. She's a 9, maybe even a 10.
Yeah, she sounds kind of foreign.
Yeah, she's awesome. So, I'm really excited about this. It's cool for us. And a lot of especially in the Odyssey cluster or the Odyssey group around the country, there are quite a few news stations like we have here that are simulcasting, like 1010 Winds in New York and WBBM in Chicago. They have an FM and an AM signal. So our reach is expanding. We're everywhere, but now we're really everywhere. Now we're in your crevices. So,
I don't know if anybody really, you know, does this kind of thing anymore, just because, like, you know, so much of it is about streaming on the Odyssey app and all that kind of thing. And people are, you know, when they are listening on traditional radio, which I think I still like to do, people are doing it on, you know, their preset stations and the stations they know in their home market or whatever. But anytime you mention those, like, those big stations that have the big AM and FM signals, and KMOX is certainly in that category, the clear channel stations, as they are known.
That's right.
I don't know if you've ever done this, like, driving through, like, central Missouri, or probably if you're driving through central Illinois, it would work well, especially if it's after sunset and you're in the clear channel time, like it's 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night or later, and those powerhouse stations get to turn up their signal while everybody else turns down. And you can get stations from that's still cool to me. I mean, it's silly because it's 2025 and we live in such an interconnected world. I could listen to a podcast in Mumbai almost instantly wanted to. It's still cool to be driving through central Missouri and turning that AM dial around and get not just Chicago, but get like random Houston or New Orleans or Pittsburgh.
It's a great way to sample what's happening in the immediate area where you are in your car. And I guess I'll still do that every now and then. I think most of us have gotten really accustomed to just listening to whatever's on your phone and you have it hooked up to your Bluetooth or the aux cord or whatever. But I sometimes still, if I'm in a, like, central Illinois, I pretty much know central Illinois stations, but
if I'm anywhere else, I'd like to know what's going on. If you're not in a major market and it's at night, I'm saying you can even get stations from really far away,
which is cool to me.
It's like people listening to their transistor going to sleep, like listening to a baseball game from four states away in the 80s while you're going to, you know, like that's, you hear stories about that. And that's the only time I feel that is if I'm driving late at night and I'm like getting stations from a long way away.
Well, the AM signal, it doesn't sound as good, but it travels a lot farther.
Yeah.
Right. So 1120, you can get, I mean, in almost all states, almost every one of our states. When I
they say Lindbergh had it like landing in Europe or whatever, which I don't know if that's actually true, but supposedly.
Yeah. If it's a clear night, it's great. And when I first moved to Chicago in 2002, if I would come home and then maybe I would drive back up, I would listen to 1120 and I could get it pretty far up north. And there were times I would be on Lakeshore Drive. The lake is right there. The city is to my left, and I could hear 1120 on Lakeshore Drive, which was unbelievable at that time. I mean, we're talking, 23 years ago, and that was cool. Now you can get it anywhere. Like, you get it with the Odyssey app. But having an FM signal is very convenient. It's a push of a button. You don't have to get on your phone and do all that stuff. But, yes, so starting March 24th, that is 2 weeks from today, we will be simulcasting on 104.1 FM. So we're looking forward to it, and we hope that you're looking forward to it as well. You have multiple options. And here's the other thing, and maybe the most important thing. Sports on FM is awesome. Baseball sounds awesome on FM. You hear crystal clear cracks of the bat and cleats on gravel, and it's awesome. It really is. So we're looking forward to it, and we're glad that you're going to be along for the ride with us. I've got Nate Gatter along for the ride with me today. We're going until 1 o'clock when the Dave Glover Show takes over. We'll hang out for a bit with Dave as well. Pretty big, another monumental thing happened with a local organization here in St. Louis, and it happens to be a basketball team. We are very excited for the SIUE Cougars, and we'll tell you why when we come back on KMOX. Oh, man. Over the weekend, what an awesome thing to have happen. The SIUE Cougars, which is a college that I feel like everybody from Southern Illinois, from my part of Southern Illinois, so, you know, Edwardsville, Granite City, Belleville, Collinsville, I think everybody goes to SIUE. Well, they have been in Division I for about 15, 16 years now in basketball, and the unthinkable finally happened.
The SIUE fans rising to their feet. The greatest season in SIUE basketball history is going to include a trip to the NCAA tournament. Rayshon Taylor dribbling it out. The shot clock and the game clock winding down. The Cougars are going to do it. Taylor is stripped. The ball is loose. And time is out. Time is out. SIUE is going dancing. The SIUE Cougars have knocked off the Redhawks 69-48. In their 17th season in Division I, the Cougars are going to the big dance.
Joe Potts on the call on the Cougars radio network. Yes, SIU Edwardsville is going to the NCAA tournament for the first time ever. They've been Division I now since, 2009? So it has been a long time coming. They have finally done it. We're going to talk to Coach Brian Baroni a little bit later in the show. In fact, he's going to join us at 12 o'clock. This is awesome, Nate. This is really cool for... And in fact, I didn't know it was happening until after the fact when I saw it. Like, oh my, SIU got to the tournament? This is great stuff. Really, really excited for them.
Really happy for them. I mean, Brian Baroni inherited a really, really difficult situation, as it is when you're, you know, a small, not just a directional school, a satellite campus of a directional school. And obviously, you know, anybody who knows SIUE versus SIU Carbondale, I don't think Edwardsville is a satellite campus in that sense. SIUE is a big and fully functioning institution on its own.
Largest, I believe, still the largest campus by acreage.
Yes,
in
it
the
is
country.
Massive.
It's
a massive.
Huge campus.
But it's a difficult situation to take over a school that didn't have a lot of brand awareness, hadn't been in division, had had no success in Division I. They hadn't had a winning season at all until the last couple of years. And to take them to the tournament now in the sixth year he's been at the helm of the program, sort of by year four, you could see them really turning a corner. The last couple of seasons have been good, and then this year they've taken it to another level. Won the 20-odd games and won the conference. Also, really happy for Joe Pott, who you hear with relative frequency on this station. He does the Cardinals pre and post game shows on the network on the weekends. He fills in on Sports Open Line all the time.
I don't know when does he not work? Because he's full time at SIU, then he's working weekends here.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people are very busy in the SIUE athletics department. I have a hard time thinking many of them are busier than Joe Pott, who does a lot of stuff. And if he hasn't called every single SIUE men's basketball game since they went Division I, he's called all but a couple.
Yeah.
So I mean, you can hear the emotion in his voice. And I think that emotion is reflective of not just him, but probably a lot of other people who inside the university and the athletics department, but also in the community, who have poured a lot of themselves into that department and into that program over the last, you know, nearly two decades now, and they're finally rewarded, and they're going to get a chance to be in the certainly the local spotlight and even in the national spotlight.
I think about just getting to the NCAA tournament for some schools, like that is the goal. And I'll admit, I went to Illinois State. We have not had a sparkling basketball history in the last couple of decades. But my feeling as a student, as somebody who went there, it's almost like getting to the tournament. That is the championship for me, in a way. Of course, I'd love for them to get there and win a couple of games. That would be awesome. We've seen Missouri Valley teams do that, go on runs, getting to Final Fours. We saw Loyola do it a few years ago, for example. But I'm just happy to get there, you know, as a fan of that team. I would say at least this initial appearance in that tournament must feel that way for anybody who went to SIUE or ever followed the athletics department. Like, getting there is such a big deal in itself. It's almost like whatever happens after the fact is gravy.
Well, and I think people who aren't sports fans, and maybe a lot of people who are sports fans even, don't recognize just how significant the impact of even getting there can be. And certainly, if whether it's this year or in the future, they find a way to get a big upset and really get themselves on, as a headline on SportsCenter, like if what it can mean for not just, I'm not talking about what it means for the basketball program, that's great, what it means for the entire university. Because take, for example, I mean, now we're what? It's been a decade or something, but Florida Gulf Coast, when they had only been a school for what, 10 or 15 years, something like that, and they upset Georgetown, and then they got another win over somebody, and they made it to the Sweet 16 out of nowhere. Nobody had ever heard of them. Their applications increased by 200% overnight.
That's right.
And this is not a unique phenomenon. Like, this is what happens with schools, those kind of schools, when they make a run. That's just free marketing, and it is so valuable to a university, which is part of the reason that, even though I think some people still look at it as sort of the play-in rather than the real tournament, which is not right. The NCAA has made it part of the real tournament. But even regardless, if SIUE goes to the first four in Dayton and has to play another 16 seed for the right to get into the first round proper and play a one seed, in some ways that can even be a benefit, because you get that additional primetime national game. You're the only game going, the eyes of the country are on you, and it's a much easier chance to get a win and extend your time in the spotlight.
The first four would be a week from tomorrow, right?
Correct.
It would start a week from
Wednesday.
Tomorrow.
They play either Tuesday or Wednesday.
So, they could be Tuesday, Wednesday. But, you know, this is the way I look at it. I know the odds are very low, but UMBC happened. Fairleigh Dickinson happened, right? I mean, there's always the opportunity that you could have an upset. Very, very difficult to do. So that's why they're called upsets, and that's why it's only happened twice.
Yeah, but so it's happened twice in the last, what, 6-7 years? So
So was it 2016 UMBC?
Yeah, wow, that feels more recent. So it's almost twice in the last decade.
I think
that's right, because if it wasn't, it was 17, because then Virginia won in 18 or 19, and they won the title the year after they lost to UMBC.
I think it was 2018 then.
That was the funny thing about it, is that Virginia for so long in that era was a great, great team, top five, top 10 going into the tournament, and then they would underperform in the tournament, lose in the second round, lose in Sweet 16, whatever it was, and that sort of culminated in being the first one seed to ever lose to a 16, and everybody was like, well, that's it. Tony Bennett's teams just can't get it done in the tournament, and the next year, that's the narrative around them, and they go and finally do the thing.
I loved Tony Bennett, by the way.
Yeah, I was a huge Tony Bennett fan.
Very, very big fan of his. It was right after the championship, I believe, when I was working at the sports station here, and there's the awards thing that happens at the MAC every year, and Zion Williamson came over. Trey Young was there right before they both got drafted. And we talked to Tony, and he was awesome, man.
He's pure class.
Yeah, I really like that guy.
Just pure class. And honestly, he and I don't know if he and Brian Baroni know each other at all. Probably paths wouldn't have crossed a whole lot based on what I can remember of Baroni's assistant coaching stops. I don't think he was in the ACC. But they have something in common, and they're both the sons of prominent, successful coaches and have followed in the business, which, you know, as I'm sure Brian, you know, could tell you and other people would,
sure,
has its pros, right? There are, it can make it easier to get the foot in the door, but it also comes with high expectations, and it comes with some baggage and all of that kind of thing. And both of them have done really well with it.
A couple of text messages have come in about the switch. We are moving to 104.1 FM. I shouldn't say moving. We are adding 104.1 FM.
Yeah, we ain't
going
anywhere.
In 2 weeks, KMOX will start simulcasting on 104.1 FM. We'll stay on 1120 also. But one text asks about 98.7. Does that mean that's over? Well, 98.7 is going to become hot 98.7. So it will exist. It just will not have KMOX on it any longer. And this other person who has texted in a million times wondering why we don't get love to 102.5 HD2. Yes, you could still listen to KMOX on 102.5 HD2 if you have an HD radio.
I love the idea that people are not just loyal to KMOX, but really loyal to their particular niche frequency.
There's one person in particular who really loves 102.5 HD2. So we love him too. Hey, I'm about to nerd out because today is Three Flags Day, which is a huge, monumental day in history in St. Louis. Peter Kastor, professor of history and American culture studies. Also, he is an expert in the Louisiana Purchase. He'll be...
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy!
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almased. Almased is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almased. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
With us next on KMOX. I'd like to think I'm not the only person in St. Louis who cares about Three Flags Day, and we are right now in the middle of it. I think this is awesome. I think it's a really cool bit of St. Louis history. It's a much bigger deal than we then we make it. And I think we should make it a much bigger deal than it is every single year. And so I intend to do that, at least for the next few moments. We are joined now by Peter Castor, the professor of history and American culture studies at Wash U. Also, he is what I believe to be the foremost expert on the Louisiana Purchase here in St. Louis. Peter Castor is with us on KMOX. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Am I correct? You are the foremost authority on the Louisiana Purchase in the St. Louis area.
I have to agree with that. Yes. I like hearing that.
Yeah.
So, yes, I'll take that title.
You're putting him in a tough spot. Like, he's got to go to the meeting of the experts. And, the other 10 guys are all listening to this. They're going to be like, Peter, you should have.
Well, there's not going to be like a Louisiana Purchase expert Royal Rumble or anything.
You don't know that. That'll happen later today.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a fight. All right. So, Three Flags Day. I do think this is very cool because it is a big part of American history. And not many people ever talk about it here. So tell us what Three Flags Day is.
So it refers to really the 2-day period on March 9th, March 10th, 1804, when St. Louis hosted this really important ceremony when the colony called Upper Louisiana, which was being governed by Spain, was transferred first to France in preparation for the final transfer to the United States under the Louisiana Purchase. And that is the way that St. Louis became part of the U.S.
So the reason it's called Three Flags Day is because it went from the Spanish flag being flown to the French flag being flown for a period of time, and then finally to ours.
Absolutely.
Why did they do it that way? What was the whole purpose of that ceremony?
Yeah, so it was, first of all, to make this official, and this was at a time when it was one thing to circulate a printed announcement. If you did a public ceremony, that really was a big deal. And it gets kind of confusing for people because they wonder, why was Spain giving it to France, giving it to the U.S.? So France had claimed this big colony called Louisiana, which they ceded to Spain in 1763. The Spanish governed here. The Spanish actually returned it to France in 1800, but it was a secret agreement. Spain continued to govern. And then France said, we'll take it back, but we promise we'll never resell it. 3 years later, they sold it. They sold it to the United States. And the Spanish were very upset by this. They didn't really want to surrender power. And the French said, you have to. So they had these ceremonies where first Spain restored the governing authority to France. And then France was officially in charge and France could hand it over to the U.S.
Is there anything about the ceremony that's like, I love reading. I mean, this is, another 100 years before, but it reminds me of like when the Olympics was in St. Louis, like early 1900s, and you hear about just these funny, quirky things that make you go, well, that would never, that's not the Olympics as we know them now. Is there something about like this big ceremony, anything that stands out in your studies of it and like what what's popular about the day that stands out in your mind as like, here's something funny about it or quirky?
Well, I don't know if I'd say funny, but certainly quirky. You said a big ceremony. First of all, it's a small ceremony.
Okay.
Because St. Louis was about the size of the Arch grounds. It was home to maybe 2,000 or 3,000 people. It was an important place commercially, but it was a small trading town. That's what it was designed to be. It hadn't taken off yet. I think what often surprises people is who's part of this. So Meriwether Lewis was present for this, of Lewis and Clark fame. He was here to get ready for the expedition. The land right across the Mississippi River, what's now Illinois, was then part of the Indiana Territory. The governor of that was a guy named William Henry Harrison, who became president in 1841. And we know him now because he gave the longest inaugural in U.S. history. He got what he deserved. He caught pneumonia and died 30 days later. But in 1804, when this ceremony happened, he was like Lewis. He was a young Virginian, a man on the make, a very senior official for his young age. So all these guys came together here at that time. It's pretty remarkable.
You mentioned Meriwether Lewis. Was this purchase actually being finalized and becoming part of the United States? I assume that was significant in Lewis and Clark's ability to actually explore it then.
There would have been no Lewis and Clark expedition without this. Jefferson had started planning the Lewis and Clark expedition several years earlier, and the Spanish were very clear. They said, we're not going to let this proceed. We're not going to let you send two of your army officers to explore the most profitable areas of trade in North America with, we're not going to give permission for that. And one of the things, one of the many things the Louisiana Purchase did was to remove all of that obstruction. And so when Lewis and Clark proceeded west in the summer of 1803, they received news of the Louisiana Purchase, but the purchase itself, the treaty, hadn't been ratified by the U.S. Senate until October of 1803. So it's this is all happening right before they left. And as soon as the transfer happened, the expedition could proceed. And one of the first things that Lewis and Clark did at every step of the way was to inform the Native Americans they encountered of this transfer. They would say, your land is now part of the United States. And of course, the Native Americans probably said, you might think so, but it's our land. But still, Lewis and Clark would make this claim because there had been this formal transfer to the United States.
Did they? I'm wondering if Native Americans, when they encountered them and informed them of this, were like, well, we didn't even know we were part of France. What are you talking about?
Right. I'm imagining so they wouldn't have known France. They wouldn't have known Spain, right?
Like, did they know? Were they aware that they were under Spanish control and then French control and then they were informed of the United States?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, first of all, they were never under Spanish or French control because in most of the land that Lewis and Clark traveled through, Native Americans were the governing authority. They're the ones in charge. They let Lewis and Clark proceed. But depending on where you went, many of them were aware that the French or the Spanish claimed that land and that if you wanted to trade with a European power, they would know who to trade with. They were keenly aware of that. But the Louisiana Purchase came as to them, it was as much a surprise to many Native Americans, frankly, as it was to the administration of Thomas Jefferson. They did not expect to get this land. They hadn't sought this land. And it all came as a big surprise in 1803.
Peter Castor is a professor of history and American culture studies at Washington University with us on KMOX. And when you were here last time, we had you in about a month or so ago. You mentioned when we were talking about Three Flags Day that there was a Revolutionary War battle that occurred where the fort is or where the fort was on this side of the river, pretty much between. It's kind of like where Ballpark Village's parking lot is.
That's right.
That's where the old fort was, and there was a battle that took place there.
Absolutely. So my starting point for both Three Flags Day and the Battle of St. Louis is if you grew up in the East Coast like I did, you have this story of the American Revolution, that it's fought between rebels and redcoats, and that the British colonies declared independence, and that's the American story. But of course, it's only the American story in a very small part of the U.S. The more common story is the experiences you have in places like St. Louis, where in 1780, where you've got St. Louis, which is claimed by the Spanish govern, it's part of the Spanish Empire, but most of the people here spoke French because they were descendants of French settlers. And they have an alliance with Anglo-American volunteers just east of the Mississippi. And then they get news that there is an opposing force coming towards them. It's British-led, but it's a small number of British regulars and various warriors from various native societies. So there's a whole regional war going on here. And the American Revolution is just part of that. So this force is coming towards St. Louis, and this multiracial, multiethnic group has to defend St. Louis. As I said, it includes Spanish officials, French settlers, free people of color, and Anglo-American militiamen, including William Clark's older brother, George Rogers Clark. He's sort of the commander of the American volunteers. And so that kind of mixed bag of defenders fought off an equally diverse group of attackers. And it's the westernmost battle of the American Revolution.
That is so fascinating
to
me.
It really is.
I love stuff like that. Okay, so the footprint, I want to get back to the fort.
Right.
I, I have about right where the fort was, correct? Was it?
Absolutely.
Okay, so where exactly was the fort? So it's not exactly where the parking lot is, or
it's
is it
close
kind of
to it?
Kind of east of it?
It's just a little bit east of it.
It was a huge fort there.
It was a big fort by
for us.
Yeah,
it's a big fort.
Yeah, and yes, very much so. By late 18th century standards, it was a large fort. There were larger ones in other parts of North America, but certainly for this region,
yeah,
it's one of the largest military establishments. Absolutely.
So if they did a dig there, what would they find?
That's a good question.
There's like parking lots and parking garages, so I don't know what you'd do.
You got to dig pretty deep.
Yeah.
But if you were lucky, what you would find, if you think about what would be left, if you're lucky, so you might find some belt buckles, you might find some bullets, which at that time were spheres. They were like, they're not the pointed bullets that we have now. It's at this time when it would be sort of like a very large BB, maybe,
yeah,
you know, half an inch in diameter.
It's still what they were using in Civil War, right?
They had just started moving over from this very complicated process of loading a gun to a slightly simpler one. But yeah, they were still basically using that Civil War. And so you might find those. You might find some plates that people would eat off of. Clothes would disintegrate. And that's what I'd want to find.
Yeah.
But you might find some metal goods if you were lucky.
So can we start a campaign to tear down the parking garage and dig up the parking lots just so we could see if we can find anything?
If the DeWitts are listening right now, you're
like,
done.
Guys, can we,
you're cooked.
Yeah.
Can we tear down all of that stuff? I want to do an archaeological dig.
No, I want to do the dig.
Yeah,
I just don't want the people who are depending on parking down here finding out about this. And one thing I'd say is, if you think about it, all of the archaeology that's gone on right across the river at Cahokia has, you know, completely transformed what we know about the history of this region. And I think there would be some really wonderful archaeology to do in downtown St. Louis.
So I have to admit that I had never heard of Three Flags Day until today. And I feel a little guilty about that and a little surprised because I feel like St. Louis,
a lot of people don't.
I feel like St. Louis generally does a pretty good job of knowing its own history and like being proud of its own history, even if they're somewhat obscure to the rest of the country. Not that my own experience is the only one, but in this way, I think Three Flags Day is not at the level of some of the other ways that we embrace our own history and our own traditions. So if people want to learn more about this, because I would like to learn more about this, what are good resources, whether it's learning, reading stuff online, or are there any places they can go in the city to kind of get, I'm sure, I don't know if there's like a museum, but something more like that?
Well, there are several places you can go. And I'll start by saying, as a nerdy historian, I'm supposed to suggest some 500-page book. There's a Wikipedia entry, and it's pretty good. So I think that's a good place to read. But I also think some of the best ways to experience history, as you said, are to see it. Always, I say, go to the Missouri History Museum in Forest Park. They get this stuff right. They do it really well. And I think that's a terrific place to learn about it. But also, if you go to the Arch, underneath, we've all seen the Arch. Underneath the Arch is a world-class museum. It was just redone.
It is really cool down there.
And its mandate is to tell the history of this place from its founding in 1764 till about 1900, excuse me, and it covers that period. So, and the History Museum similarly has, its mandate was always to tell St. Louis's history, and I think those are the two best places to go. History Museum is free, so I start there, and the museum under the arch is pretty spectacular also.
Peter Castor, thank you for coming in and nerding out with me on this.
Hey, I always love nerding out with people.
I know, it's awesome. I think this is a cool day and we should celebrate it more than we do.
I agree.
So you're the best person to talk to about it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you once again for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Peter Castor, professor of history and American culture studies at Washington University. He is the expert in St. Louis on the Louisiana Purchase. If you need any of Louisiana Purchase, if you have needs, go to Peter Castor.
If you need to purchase a Louisiana.
Well, good luck now. Nate Gatter in for Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji on KMOX.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Hey, Nate Gatter, did you see that KMOX is expanding?
I did see that.
Yeah,
I was here the whole show.
So 2 weeks from today, March 24th. So you're supposed to say you didn't see it.
Oh, sorry.
Tell you.
I botched it.
Screwing up the bit.
We can just, hey, let's just start over. And
okay, let's start over. Let's do that again. Because
nobody heard that. This is not live. We're going to do it
Nate
again.
Nate screwed up. We're going to do this again.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Hey, Nate, did you see that KMOX is expanding?
What? No, yeah. I'm flabbergasted.
Yeah, yeah. Hold on. Let me tell you what's going on. So for 100 years, we've been on 1120 AM. For several years, we've been on the Odyssey app for free. We've been on 98.7 FM, but no longer. In 2 weeks, March 24th, which is the week of opening day, KMOX is expanding to 104.1 FM. So we are going on 1120 AM, of course, 104.1 FM, and the free Odyssey app. We're everywhere. And if you look, don't try it yet, but in 2 weeks, try putting 104.1 FM on your preset in your car. We're going to be there. It's going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to it.
Chris, did you see, in the spirit of our earlier conversation about SIUE basketball and our upcoming conversation with their head coach, Brian Baroni, that you can hear at noon, that they're not the only local college having basketball success? The Washington University Bears won their first two games in the NCAA tournament, and they are through to the Division III Sweet 16. They will play Wisconsin Lutheran on Friday.
That's really awesome.
We're just all winning.
I love that. And we're going to talk to Brian Baroni again at 12 o'clock. He is the head coach at SIUE. And we are excited for them. I would love for them to get a little upset here and extend their run. Depending on who they play, I mean, I guess they could be in that first four on Tuesday of next week.
Yeah, they'll play somewhere between Tuesday and Friday of next week.
Yeah, we just
first
don't
game.
Know.
We don't know yet. We'll find out on Sunday. And, you know, he's just a super fun guy, like a fun personality. And I think people have in their minds a stereotype of how coaches talk when they're, you know, when they talk with media, when they talk with people, because, you know, coaches who are in front of media all the time, it's in their best interest to be restrained and to be pretty canned and to kind of just, you know, do the coach speak answers, do the cliches and stick, you know, it's like Bull Durham, like learn the cliches and stick to them because they won't get you in trouble. You know, Brian Baroni doesn't really have that style. And I think people will really enjoy getting to know him better over the course of the next week or two, or hopefully longer.
Hey, I hope they have a nice little UMBC thing in them. Or, like you mentioned, Florida Gulf Coast.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I mean, what it would do.
That'd be cool.
Especially because that's a university that has so much potential. It could grow so easily and so quickly if they did all of a sudden get double the applications over the next couple of years that they got over the preceding 2 years. You know, they would be in a position to handle that and capitalize on it very quickly in a way that some smaller private schools that don't have the infrastructure aren't necessarily.
That's Nate Gatter in for Amy today. I'm Chris Ranji. When we come back, always at 11 o'clock, we talk to political commentator, YouTuber, author of a daily newsletter called So What? You've seen him on CNN in the past, Washington Post. Chris Saliza will talk some politics with us when we come back on KMOX.